We're in Daniel chapter 9, and I have taken one portion of this text, and I have just, of chapter 9. Chapter 9 is all about, as you know, what we're calling the 77s. And tonight, we are still doing that, and we're still not going to get to the 77s. I'm just going to tell you that, but it's important. I think it's imperative that we look at it, at what is leading up to the discussion of the 77s, because, not only because, but because the fact is, Daniel gives 23 verses, verse 1 through 23, as prelude to what the entire chapter is about. He spends three quarters of the chapter leading up to the substance of the chapter. There's a reason for it. It is because what is coming after verse 23, beginning with verse 24, what is coming is the answer to Daniel's prayer. Wouldn't have come. None of this would have happened if it hadn't been for Daniel praying. Not that it wouldn't have come in the future. Not that the events presented would not have come. But Daniel's information of it would not have come. That's important for us to know. It is important for us to understand the mental state of Daniel as he receives this final, or this not final, but this particular revelation that is going to come in verses 24 through 27. I will tell you before we get there, verses 24 through 27 are the most controversial verses, if not in all of the Old Testament, certainly in the book of Daniel. Not just have been, but are the most controversial. And I'm not going to plow through them quickly. I want you to understand, this is one of those times where I'm going to just tell you, I want you to understand what other people say. And then I want you to hear what I believe. And I want you to, I don't want you to take my word for any of it. Do your research. Compare what I say with other people. Now, I will tell you up front, I'm not a lone ranger. There are people who hold my position. I won't overload you with people who agree with me, but I'm not pretending that I'm the only one smart enough to come up with this. I'm not smart enough. But I am convinced by my position. I'm convinced of the argument. So, I want to give the importance of 24 through 27 its due respect. And hopefully, you will walk away understanding the issues of Daniel's 70 weeks or 77s, and you'll understand why people fall where they do in their understanding of how things are going to end up in this world. Okay? Daniel cannot be understood fully apart from the book of Revelation. Jesus' sermon on Olivet, called the Olivet Discourse, cannot be understood apart from Daniel. It was his text. It was the text, beginning in verse 24. So I'm trying to build this up for next week. I want 100 people here next week. And I'll bore them to death and we'll be back to us. So, all right. We are resuming Daniel chapter 9, but tonight with verse 20. And we will, if Jesus tarries, if he comes back today, right now, soon, I'll be right. But I'll also be gone, so I won't be able to finish. So we'll get it taught by a much better teacher. While I was speaking and praying, confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my plea before the Lord, Yahweh, my God, for the holy hill of my God, comma, while I was speaking in prayer. Now that's just a repeat of everything he just said in verse 20. While I was speaking in prayer, here comes the news. The man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the first, came to me in swift flight at the time of the evening sacrifice. He made me understand, speaking with me and saying, quote, O Daniel, I have now come out to give you insight and understanding. At the beginning of your pleas for mercy, a word went out, and I have come to tell it to you, for you are greatly loved. Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision. So this is the final portion of the introduction of what the 70 weeks are. And there are some very important things revealed in this text that matter. And I don't want us to miss it. So often, I used to go and listen to people teach on prophecy. And so often, they would lift the 70 weeks, verses 24 to 27, out and just deal with them. Daniel didn't do that. Daniel could have done that. If the 70 weeks were all that mattered, we wouldn't have been bored or bothered with hearing about how Daniel felt, how weary he was, how sick he was at what he had seen in the vision. Because you see, all of this is Daniel's reaction to the vision that included that little horn. Remember? He was so distraught. He went about the king's business, but he couldn't get his mind off that little horn, that vision. And it bothered him so much, it wore him out so much that I got to pray about this. Have you ever been that worried about something? You just got so worried about it, I can't do anything before I pray about this. I can't get it off my mind. I can't change what I just saw. I need God to deal with me. Well, that's what chapter 9 is up to this point. It's how Daniel is positioned, where he is emotionally, what he is doing physically and spiritually. And it's how God responds to it. What we see in 24 through 27 about the 77s is nothing more or less than God responding to Daniel's prayer. Never forget that. It's important. It's critically important. God intended Israel to know the information that is given to Daniel by Gabriel that is revealed in 24 to 27. But we can't take any of the principles out of the equation. Daniel is as important to this as Gabriel. As important as the message, the revelation that he gets. Let's look at verse 20. It says, while I was speaking and praying, and then he elaborates. He was talking. It was out loud. He was praying aloud. And what he was praying had to do with confession of my sin and the sin of my people. He says, while this was going on, verse 21 again, it reiterates, the man Gabriel shows up. Now, he kind of says, and I'm going to cut ahead a little bit here, but he kind of says here, I was in the middle of praying, and Gabriel shows up. But we're going to find out, God started answering Daniel's prayer the minute he opened his mouth. The minute he opened his mouth, God started answering Daniel's prayer. Look at me. You got to make a pastoral application every now and then, folks. What did James say? You don't have because you don't ask. You have no idea. And I don't have any idea what God would either show or give or do if we just prayed. Now, I don't mean to tell you that if Daniel hadn't prayed, God never would have given this. I don't mean to tell you that at all. God's God. God knows what He's going to do. God knows how He's going to do it. God knows through whom He's going to do it. God wasn't surprised that Daniel prayed. Daniel was surprised that God was so quick to answer. He couldn't even put it into words. I mean, he went in through praying, and there's Gabriel. There's Gabriel. Well, look what he was praying. Confessing my sin. I don't know you. I don't know. Have you been reading along here? Have you been reading along in the book of Daniel? Have you found any sin in the book of Daniel that Daniel committed? Can you? He is the only character that I know, only major character that I know in the Bible, other than Jesus, who no sin is accounted. None's attributed to him. But did he sin? Apparently he had something to confess. It says I confess my sin. The writer of Proverbs asked this question in Proverbs 20, verse 9. Who can say, I have kept my heart pure, I am clean and without sin? Well, Daniel couldn't say it. And I'm going to tell you something. If Daniel couldn't say it, you can't either. You can't either. It also tells me something else. Every person in a relationship with God can expect to fail. And God, listen to me. God hears and even answers the prayers of failures. Hey. You mean I don't have to do a penance and I don't have to we're going to find out. He no more than opened his mouth than God went to work. God said, Gabriel, get over there. Daniel's in the midst of talking to God and thinking I'm going to wait for God's answer. And God's already answering. He doesn't even know it. He hadn't shut up long enough to see the Gabriel standing there. Well, verse 21, Gabriel is called a man. Do you see that? The man, Gabriel. And we know who it is because he refers to him as having been seen in the earlier vision of Daniel chapter 8, verses 15 and 16. And I don't know, but I read chapter 8 again and again and again, and I can't tell for sure, but I do think in Daniel chapter 8, Gabriel there is in a vision. Because remember, he ends up out over the river, Uliah. But you know, Gabriel is identified several times in the Bible where he's not a vision. I don't think he's a vision in our verses here. I think he appears to Daniel. I think he's there. I don't think he's some mystical ghost. He's an angel. No question about that. But he's physical. He appears physically to Daniel in this text. He appears physically to Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist. Remember that? Physically appears to him. He appears physically to Mary also. And in all of the cases where he appears, whether in a vision or physically, he does the same thing. I have something to tell you. I have something to tell you. I have a word from God. The word angel, which is not used here, but the word angel, it's a Greek word, angelos. You know what it means? Right. Messenger. Messenger. I can't prove it. I just think he was the holy messenger. I think that's who Gabriel is. Holy messenger. And for any of you who think you've seen Gabriel, try therapy. And the reason I say that is because we have a message. We have the final message. This is it. We have the final word from God. And Jesus, in His incarnation, was the fullest expression, revelation of God. Doesn't mean that Gabriel's gone and doesn't do anything. I just think that up until the time of the Bibles being put together, he was a primary, if not the primary, heavenly messenger. By the way, the word Gabriel, the name Gabriel, means to, it's a combination of words. It means strong man, but it's with the E-L. The L suffix means God. So put together, simply if you put the Hebrew name for Gaber, you would have strong man. But you put it together with L and you have strongman God. It makes no sense. John Walvoord, in his commentary, suggests what I think is probably the best summation of the arguments, is that it means God's strong man. God's strong man. You got what I mean? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't say in this text that God sent Gabriel. Read it real carefully, and we don't know who sent him. But we know that wherever Gabriel was, there was a lot of affection and love for Daniel in that place. And since angels function at the will of God, it is never wrong to conclude that they act on God's behalf, or that they're acting at His directive. Now, whether that's through a chain of command, I don't know. But you know what they say, the buck stops somewhere. The buck doesn't stop with Gabriel. And if Michael is an archangel, it doesn't stop with Michael. It stops where it started, with God. So, while I was speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the first, came to me. The word there, came, can mean two things. It can mean to arrive. It can also mean, don't hurt me, can also mean touch. To touch. Not a lot of difference. But if you're Daniel, it might have made a difference. Like, hey Daniel, open your eyes. Hey. Tap on. I just think it's interesting. But whether it means to physically touch, or it means to arrive, or to just come into the presence of, it is obvious that his arrival, or his the presence of this angel, ended Daniel's prayer. And yes. I'm sorry. It says in the English Standard Version, in the NIV, in the New Revised Standard Version, this phrase, he came to me in swift flight. Do you see that? Yeah. Does anybody here have a New American Standard Bible? Can you read what it says?
He came to me in my extreme weariness.
Whoa. It came to me. Yeah. How in the world do one translate it this way and one translates it? Well, literally, one translates it your way, that way, in the NASB, and so many others translate it another way. And what could it... Are these just various ways to translate the same word? No, as a matter of fact, they're not. They're two different words. And somewhere along the lineage of our translation, going back a long way to the King James Version and the lineage following it, Hebrew scholars who came across this passage of Scripture struggled with its meaning. Here was their concern. Why in the world would an angel be weary? He came to me and the angel was weary. No, here's my point. They all agreed that it said that it was weariness, not swift flight. Another implied but unfound verb was planted there to help them adjust their understanding. Because what they read was, what they thought they read was, this angel is weary. It made no sense. And it doesn't make sense that an angel would be weary. It doesn't say anything about him panting or anything like that. But if you read the context of this of this occurrence, who was weary? Daniel was exhausted. Daniel continues to be exhausted in chapter 10. Verse 1. The word was true, and it was a great conflict. In those days I was mourning for 3 weeks. Verse 3, I ate no delicacies, no meat or wine entered my mouth, nor did I anoint myself with oil for the full 3 weeks. He's exhausted. This is all tiresome. So the reason our English Standard Version, NIV, King James Version, New Revised Standard Version, these are all lineages of translations, is because they're following the early translation that is complicated. There's no clear solution. The NASB decided that it would supply what was missing. And what was missing was a link to Daniel being exhausted. There's nothing there. It just says about, talks about, came to me in weariness. Well, whose weariness? Well, he is the one coming, so he must be weary. That's why they didn't translate it that way. They didn't see any sense in Gabriel being exhausted or weary. But they also didn't see any connection that Daniel was the weary one. And so they just decided, let's supply a verb here that isn't found. It must be missing. And the verb that they supplied was flight. He flew to me. Now, do angels fly? How do you know? Well, so. Do all angels have wings? Does this angel have wings? Why do you say this angel has wings? It says he's like a man, the man Gabriel. Do men have wings? And that men is generic here, men and women, mankind. Do people have wings? No, they don't. Yes?
Okay, did they change the original King James because it says being caused to fly swiftly? That doesn't mention being tired.
Yes, that's where it was originally turned into English. It's in the translation from English to Hebrew, or Hebrew to English, that this supplying of the word flight comes in. Because the assumption was angels fly. This, it has to do with how he came.
But I think he came quickly because God sent him quickly. Don't you think God sent him in a hurry? I mean, that's what you're saying.
Well, I do think God sent him in a hurry, but I don't think that's what this text is really saying. I think the text is really saying that this angel arrived while Daniel was exhausted. Like the New American Standard Bible translates it. I think it's correct. And anybody who reads Hebrew would agree that somehow somebody supplied something because it's just not there. And the NASB has been honest about it. Now, did they cause problems of their own? Well, they're the ones who stick out there now and don't agree with anybody on this subject. But I believe they're correct. I know they are. At the time of the evening sacrifice. Well, for 50 years, there hadn't been an evening sacrifice. They've been in Babylon. There wasn't any sacrifice once the temple was destroyed in 586 B.C. That was 50 years ago. But Daniel's old enough to remember having been raised in Israel or Judah that the temple was the site of an afternoon sacrifice. That afternoon sacrifice, a daily sacrifice, was a sacrifice of oblation. It included the sacrifice of an animal to cover Israel's sin in general, but it also included the sacrifice or the offering of a meal and drink. But that was an offering to God, a drink offering and a meal offering. And it's included in the oblation offering. That means the meal offering. But they always occurred together. It's interesting that that very particular sacrifice that was interrupted in terms of time, but Daniel recognized as the time of that sacrifice, was the time Gabriel arrives with the coming message. Because that sacrifice, perhaps more than any other sacrifice in the Old Testament, is a sacrifice pointing to the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus Christ for the sins of the world. Now, let's go on. He made me to understand, speaking with me. He made me to understand. In other words, he cleared up my thinking. Remember, folks, remember, why did he go to prayer? Why did he start praying? He was confused. Such a horrible vision that he had seen, and he didn't get it. He didn't understand it. What he did understand was it was terrible. It was terrible. And it looked for all the world to him like Israel's finished. Israel's done. So he made me understand. I can almost see Gabriel shaking him a little bit. He's touching him anyway, maybe. But the point is here, he's explaining. He's giving the answer that was perplexing Daniel and drove him to prayer, even though Daniel never asks for an explanation in his prayer. He doesn't get to that point. He doesn't get to that point. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? You can get there. May I, for just a moment, tell you a story that I think is akin with no angel involved? I was pastor of a church in Houston, Texas, on the southeast side of town, nearer to Clear Lake than to Houston. And it was an old church, second oldest Baptist church in Houston, as a matter of fact, second only to First Baptist Church in terms of age. And our association of churches, Union Baptist Association, was having area-wide revivals. Churches were supposed to combine forces and have a big revival in their area. And we had a big revival at Dolby Stadium, I think is the name of it, in Pasadena. Well, it's a Pasadena school district, but it's in Houston. And our partnering church was a little church known as Sagemont Baptist Church. We were a gnat compared to them, and they were a behemoth. They were huge. And so the pastor of Sagemont was able to secure the preaching of the preacher named Bailey Smith. And we did all our thing. We got our people, you know, every church that participated had to really drum up people to be there. And we drummed up people to be there. And, you know, we had the prayer, you know, the preceding prayer meetings for that revival in our own church. And we prayed for revival. And the first night, Bailey got up there and preached. And I was on the platform. You know how preachers used to sit up on the platform? I was on the platform, and So I knew everybody was looking at me. Bailey said contradictory things. I think at one time he said, if you doubt your salvation, you're not saved. And then later I think he said, if you've never doubted your salvation, you're probably not saved. And I'm kind of like that. I'm kind of like, well, did you just say that? And so, you know, I was kind of out of it. Didn't expect anything when the invitation came, because I certainly hadn't been moved, not by that. And I kind of questioned anybody that would be moved by something like that. And the invitation was given, and we're all standing up and singing. And I see this couple bounding out of the bleachers over rails, coming down, skipping, jumping, hopping. And who is it? A couple from my church. Not just a couple from my church, but my children's pastor and his wife got saved. Oh, I questioned them. I questioned it. What do you mean you got saved? Well, they got saved. They did get saved. They didn't hear anything Bailey said. They couldn't have told you what he preached. Just something about our church having prayed for revival, and they had to come to face the fact that they couldn't do God's will because they were running as fast as they could away from God. And the reason they were was because they weren't saved. They didn't know Him. I drove away from their home that night after having counseled with them, and I was headed back home, and I started pondering, how in the world could God be working like that, and I don't see it? I don't see it. I told Ruth about it when I got home. I said, well, what else is wrong in our church? Our children's pastor wasn't even a Christian. Had a huge children's ministry. Huge. We had buses, brother. I got up the next morning wondering, what am I missing? What's going on around me that I don't see? Am I wrong? Is something real happening here that I don't see? And it just, I couldn't get away from it. So I told my secretary, hold all my calls, don't want to see anybody. I got to get some answers here. So I shut everybody out. And I shut myself in. And somewhere along the way, I prayed, God, I cannot get up from here if you're at work and I'm missing it. Am I missing it? And I didn't have an answer. God didn't say anything to me. I answered it myself. Of course you're missing something. That's why you're asking this question. So I started thinking, why would I miss it? A little word came to my mind. You know what that word was? Sin. Sin. In your life, Robert, keeping you from engaging and seeing the work of God. Let's deal with that. 7 hours later, I got off my face, exhausted, worn out. Don't ever ask God to bring all your sin to mind unless you have some time on your hands. If you want it, He'll give it. Sin number one, pride. Sin number one, arrogance. I ask God forgive me of that sin. I confessed it to Him. And I had revival. I called all my deacons at the end of that day and I said, we're going to start a revival meeting in our church tomorrow night. We're going to see what God's doing here. I was out of sermons. I had one a week. You know, one sermon a week was what I was good for. So I called an evangelist. I said, come over and preach. I don't know why, but we're having a revival. One of the nights of that revival. By the way, people were saved every night. House was full. This went on for a couple of weeks. A girl I had been dealing with, a young lady I'd been dealing with, a drug addict, a practicing witch, who had attempted suicide so many times she couldn't count. Her arms looked like mincemeat. But she would talk to me. She would stop by the office. The reason she would is because one day she wrecked her car in our parking lot. She just flew off the road and ended up in our parking lot. She was high as a kite. We got her home, got her car to her, befriended her. Showed up one of the nights of our revival meeting. The evangelist gave the invitation that night. I wasn't looking at her any more than the man in the moon, but I'm standing there to receive people. And I look over, and there she is, right there. With her arms out. I want to be saved. Was she really saved? I mean, seriously, this woman cursed me with a curse at one time because she was so full of the devil. Not that cursing me means you're full of the devil, but that's why she did it. Because I told her the only way out of her bondage to drugs was Jesus. And she told me what I could do with Jesus. But I prayed with her. Was she really saved, or did she go back to that lifestyle? And I'm going to tell you this, folks. This is not proof. I want you to know that. This is not proof. But she has just finished a career as a chaplain. She tracked me down, told me when she got into seminary, asked me for an endorsement. I gave it to her. Even if it was a Methodist seminary, I didn't care. I didn't care. If you don't think God's just waiting on you to confess, you're wrong. He's always waiting for that. Let me show you something, and I'm going to close. He says, O Daniel, I have now come out to give you insight and understanding. Those are like synonyms. I mean the same thing. Insight and understanding. But look at verse 23. At the beginning of your pleas. Wait a minute. Where does that say? What time was that? At the beginning of your pleas for mercy, a word went out. And I have come to tell it to you. You are greatly loved. Go back to verse 3. That's when the prayer began. Then I turned my face to the Lord God, seeking Him by prayer and pleas for mercy. And that instant, a word went out. Go tell Him I love Him. Do you remember that prodigal boy? In Luke 15, he wasted all his father's inheritance, embarrassed the name, and then you know, ended up feeding pigs and being proud to eat what they ate. And he came to himself, it says. He said, I'm going home. And I'm going to say to my father, I am not worthy to be your son. Make me one of your hired servants. And then the story goes, you read it, check me out. When he was a long way off, his father saw him and had compassion on him and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. Literally, it says kissed him a lot. And the son never got to make the statement he intended to make. His coming home was enough. I don't think Daniel was a prodigal son, not compared to me. But he was a prodigal to himself. He had sin to confess. Don't look at other people. Compare yourself to them. Look at you. Compare yourself to the person Jesus is. Compare yourself to Him. You'll feel the need to pray. That's humility. That's humility. And that's how God meets it. Every time He meets it that way. Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision. Now, I'm going to close and just say this. There is no vision coming. What's about to be told to Daniel is not a vision. And I don't think that implies a mystical kind of vision like a dream. When he says vision there, it is used in apposition with the word, the word and vision. In other words, they're the same thing. The word and the vision. This is a revelation from God. God is giving Daniel divine revelation. Daniel is in a position to receive it. And the reason he is because he's humbled. He's opened himself to God. And besides that, God loved him. God loved him. And it's a big revelation, folks. See, he confessed his sin and he confessed Israel's sin. And this revelation is going to have something to do with both him and Israel. Okay? I want to tell you something. I don't think we're in it. I don't think we're in this vision. Because it's not to us. It's not to the church. Daniel wasn't praying for the church. Daniel wasn't confessing for a church. Daniel was a Jew. He was praying for Jews. He was praying for Israel. This vision is for them. Let's pray. Lord, whatever it takes, to break our stiff neck is worth it if it means we get to experience what you're doing and we get to experience you. So whatever it takes, break Park Hills. Break me. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.